Hello and welcome to the Colts Cover 2 podcast. I am Joel A. Erickson. I am joined as always by Nate Atkins. We have a little bit of a hard time with the podcast, just the way the schedule works. Just so the Colts kind of practice in pods. It's the way the NFL CBA works, where especially once they're in pads, they can only go three days at a time in terms of padded practices, and then they have to take some time off. But the problem for us is those 3 days are often in like Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And I would like to kind of get to the end of a pod of practices and then do a podcast, but that's not really possible. We'd be giving it to you on Friday morning when, you know, some of you are still in the summer. You guys are going to the lake and stuff like that. So we're just going to kind of go as it comes and when we have a good chance to do it. But, Nate, we're four practices in. What do you think is the overarching? It's hard to have a bunch of overarching opinions, but what sticks out to you from the first week or so of camp?
Yeah, so at this point, and we're recording this on Wednesday morning, we've seen one practice where it's like the fully padded, full experience. So I think the very nature of that makes it so that the passing game is front and center. And so I think on both the offensive and defensive side of the ball, the receivers and the secondary have really caught my attention, mostly in good ways. I think positive signs based on the youth and questions they had on those levels. So on defense, I think the fact that Nick Cross is playing so much and that coaches are happy about him, the fact that Julian Blackman's out here and it looks like nothing's changed, I think that's a huge step forward for a defense that's trying to take a big leap. And that's allowed them to get better looks out of the receivers, which is the big question for this team still, is what are they going to do at wide receiver? Who's going to play? And that's what will be interesting to watch once, you know, now that they have pads on, because yesterday was sort of the first time I thought the receivers kind of had issues, kind of didn't look like that they had it all together. But that's one day and it's in pads, but it's allowed us to really get a sense of the guys they're investing in, you know, and we see how much Paris Campbell connects with Matt Ryan. That has been a connection we saw in the spring, but it just every single day that pops up. Naheem Hines' role in the offense, that's become clear. So something's crystallized like that. And then just the way that they're challenging everybody at those levels. So being able to put Stephon Gilmore on Alec Pierce as much as they do, kind of really challenge him as many looks as he's getting in the red zone and everything like that. Like this, to them, they've started to realize like they have to fix two areas of this team from last year, which was the passing game and the ability to stop opposing passers. And we talk so much about the pass rush, and obviously that's an element of it. But I think really challenging wide receivers on the perimeter, that's another area they could have been a little bit better at last year. And so far this year, the addition of Stephon Gilmore, length with Brandon Faison, the battles are getting really pretty darn fun right now.
Well, it's also something that, you know, the previous scheme didn't emphasize was that bump at the line of scrimmage. You know, that they're more likely to play off in Matt Eberflus's scheme, whereas this one, despite being a zone scheme, has always been the foundation of it has always been bump and run pressure at the line. And so the shift in systems, I think, has made it more physical at the line for them in a way that I wonder, you know, would that have helped a guy like Rocky Sin kind of play like he did last year earlier if he'd been playing in a system like that where he got to get his hands on people right away. I think most fans have been clamoring for the bump and run, the press coverage, even in zone, for a long time. Obviously, I think that the advantage to it is that it makes it hard to get off the line. I mean, one of the things that basically every Colts front office scouting type has said is the hardest thing to deal with receivers right now is trying to figure out whether or not they can get off of press coverage, because they don't do it a lot in college, and they have to do it in the NFL. Well, they didn't have to do it a ton against the previous scheme. I mean, they did some press coverage, but it wasn't the same as what this one's going to be. And if it's that difficult for receivers coming out of college, it's clearly an issue even once guys are in the NFL. So it's going to be fun to watch. It's going to be fun to watch. I think it's more fun to watch that than it is to watch just people sitting 6 yards off or 7 yards off and stuff like that. So whether or not it works is sort of dependent on the players, but from a viewer's standpoint, as somebody who likes defense, it's more fun to watch bump and run.
Yeah, and I think like it's really going to help the youth at wide receiver for the reasons you mentioned, is that everything we keep hearing, like when they drafted Alec Pierce and all, you know, any questions you had about him, they just said, like, well, he doesn't see the, you know, the playbook's not advanced in college, and also he doesn't face press. And so, you know, how's that going to translate? Well, you get a Stephon Gilmore in his face every single day. That is a big, big test of growth. And so they're able to learn about the roster a little bit easier that way. It's where, like, when guys stand out in these settings, the way that they're playing defense, I think it means a little bit more than maybe it would against the Matt Eberflus style of defense. So Ashton Doolin's a guy that seems to have carved out a role in that process. He's actually, I thought, handled press pretty well and really looks like more than just a guy who's just going to run down the field away from everybody. Like, he's making some contested catches. His route running is getting better. So they're able to get more intense looks at these guys, which is critical, not only for figuring out their depth chart, but figuring out what's the next step, because the idea of T.Y. Hilton always lingering out there, there's other veteran wide receivers they could go after. It still feels like this is too young of a room, but they're trying to gauge, like, just how far off are they?
Ashton Doolin has such a huge advantage in terms of being able to get off of press coverage, in that his job on punt team is to beat Vice, which is way worse than press coverage. It's one of those things. I mean, he's big and strong and all that stuff, but also, you know, for 3 years, his primary role on the team has been to beat Vice, which is so hard. So that's one of the things that helps him. I think one of the interesting things, too, is just how naturally just putting Alec Pierce with the first team. He's played some with the second team. Again, I still think he's probably taking more snaps than anybody else on the team right now, just based on rotations. But he's played so much with the first team that they're not necessarily trying to put Stephon Gilmore on him in practices. Frank Reich said that yesterday. There was some thought that maybe the fact that you'd seen Gilmore on Pierce so often was intentional. Reich said it's not. It's just a function of where Gilmore is playing the right side. Frequently, Michael Pittman is on the boundary to the other side where Brandon Faison has been playing, and so that lines him up against Pierce. And that's just a function of putting your rookie wide receiver in there with the first group over and over and over again. To be fair, I would say for the most part, Gilmore's gotten the best of those things. Now, some of it, I think, is route recognition. I noticed one thing in the one-on-ones yesterday with Pierce where it looked like he got open a couple times, and the ball didn't go the same way, and then Matt Ryan went over and talked to him. And I think some of that is just where the variation in the route goes, because, like, Matt Ryan isn't running that one-on-one to get a win. He's running that one-on-one to get Pierce to run the route, whatever route's called, the way he wants to. And so I think that's part of it. Is Michael Pittman sort of alluded to this the other day, where he said, like, his tendency is to just see green and go, but he has to be on Ryan's spot. And so I think that was some of what we saw yesterday. Some of that is Pierce learning where he has to be for Matt Ryan. But also some of it is just Stephon Gilmore is really savvy. I think one of the things that sticks out to me about Gilmore is Gilmore really understands what route is being run against him in a way that frequently when you're watching his reps, it looks like he's beat initially. And he's not really beat at all, because he knows where the route's going to go, and he's putting himself between the quarterback and the receiver. I've noticed it in several practices now. And that's that veteran ability that you can't really teach. Those instincts that you can't really teach is stuff like that with Gilmore. It's kind of interesting to watch how many times I've been like, oh, like I felt like Gilmore's, he's got to step on Gilmore, and then Gilmore gets the PBU. So that's been one of the interesting things to watch. One of the things about the defensive backs, I was talking to Ron Miles the other day. The Colts really like what they've seen from their secondary early. You know, he cautioned that it's early, but I was asking about a bunch of different people: Nick Cross, Julian Blackman, Isaiah Rogers, and I can get into what he said about all those guys in here in a little bit. But the overarching thing was, at the end of it, he was like, I got to be honest, I really like what we have here. I really like what we have. And if he said they have to keep stacking it, but he's just really encouraged by what both the corners and the safeties have shown so far.
Yeah, I noticed that the other night on Saturday night when they had all the fans out here, and it was kind of a spectacle. And like, Isaiah Rogers that night had to play in the nickel because Tony Brown was out, and they told him you gotta play inside, and he admitted he wasn't exactly thrilled about that because he's trying to compete for an outside cornerback spot. And it hit me in that moment, like, this is a good place to be in. Like, if Isaiah Rogers we'll see what ends up happening. A long time to go. But if he ends up being a guy that doesn't start, I mean, that feels pretty good given the fact that he showed great ball skills last year. We know he can run like a deer. Like, a lot of people thought he would just step in and be that next cornerback. And you take this back to just early in the offseason when they trade Rocky Sin for Yannick Ngakoue, it was like, well, who are the corners now? I guess it's going to be they just signed Brandon Faison, so it's going to be Faison and Isaiah Rodgers. And all right, well, then just the trickle-down effect of getting a Stephon Gilmore, bumping one of those guys to being the extra defensive back. And then, like you said, it lets Gilmore be sort of a communicator on his own at cornerback. That's not normally the way secondaries are devised, but it's the way this one kind of needs to be designed when you have such young safeties. So those cornerbacks or savviness on the outside, it's just going to ideally propel the guys in the back end. And what's interesting with Gilmore is that, you know, he is such a quiet guy to talk to. It's incredible.
Milo said he's exactly like that in the we asked him just about his personality. We weren't even trying to lead him into anything, and the first thing out of his mouth was he's really quiet. He's really quiet.
Like, we were joking, like, every answer is just like this straight monotone quiet tone. But then, like, I went back and I looked at the words, and like, he's said some interesting stuff. It's just so quiet. But it's like, his leadership is just so much different. And what you see with him is, like, when he gets out there and you see him lined up across from Alec Pierce, like, it's go time for him. Like, he's trying to get this rookie as accelerated as possible. That's like, Stephon Gilmore doesn't need to learn how to play cornerback out here. But he's trying to, obviously he's trying to fit the defense and help them do what they're trying to do. But he's really trying to be a resource on the or a challenge on the other side of the ball from Alec Pierce. Like, I noticed yesterday, you know, there was a moment they threw in the end zone, and it probably wasn't going to be a catchable ball anyway, but Pierce went up to get a one-handed grab, and Gilmore just shoves him out of the back of the end zone. Like, you know, you're going to get shoved every time that you go up to get a ball here, and that's what life in the NFL is going to be. Again, this is a guy who could do nothing here at training camp, but that's where he's finding his edge and his purpose, and that's what makes it fun to watch for us.
The Isaiah Rodgers conversation with Ron Miles was pretty interesting, I thought, because I asked. So just for listeners, what we've noticed so far, and it really hasn't been hard to notice this, is that Brandon Faison has pretty much been the starting corner along with Kenny Moore and Stephon Gilmore so far. And so that makes you wonder, like, is Faison the presumed number one right now? Does Rodgers have a chance to start? And I asked if he has a chance to start. And the way Miles answered it was, I think he said with those four, he said Gilmore, Kenny, Faison, and he cautioned, and this is important to know because I know Michael Pittman had a big catch on Faison yesterday, and people only sometimes only read our highlights. But he said, and Faison is having a really good camp so far. He said, and then Isaiah Rodgers. But with Rodgers, it's almost interesting that they're almost using him as a fourth corner and more of a true sense of the word right now. Whereas I think previously we would talk about who's the sub, who's the first man up if it's outside, and who's the first man up on the inside, and they never really had that slot. I think that they're intrigued by the idea of whether or not, if something happens to Kenny Moore the second, that Isaiah Rodgers can be the first guy up in there, which is an interesting thing because our skill sets are a little bit different. You know, Rodgers, we haven't seen the line of scrimmage stuff that you see with Kenny that makes some of what makes Kenny special. The ball skills are there. And he probably gives you, I would say Rodgers gives you more down the field when, you know, long crossers, that kind of thing, just because of his pure speed and his ability on those balls. It would be a different nickel, but I would also say that my initial reaction was I'd rather have Isaiah Rodgers playing that spot if Kenny went down than anybody else on the roster that I know of. You know, last year they kind of had TJ Carey. They had some guys who'd played in the nickel before. I don't know who that guy is on this roster. And so it's interesting to me to think that, you know, you could use Rodgers as essentially a catch-all, like a swing tackle, basically, you know, where you can play different spots based on what you need. Because the idea that all three of them or all four of those guys are going to make it through the whole season healthy is it's just not going to happen.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Stephon Gilmore has missed 14 games in 2 years, so I think life will find a way with this. But I did think about that when he
– Jeff Goldblum reference.
when Isaiah was practicing at nickel, I thought about that because he was with the second team. And, like, if they just need a body to be out there to fill the spot, they don't have to play Isaiah Rodgers there. So it told me something that they wanted to get a look at that. Again, he's – What's good for that is, like, he is so close with Kenny Moore, and those guys just stand by each other in the sidelines. So if that ends up being the path, he's going to soak up as much as he can. And it's tricky because it's like the concern with Isaiah in the nickels would be run defense. You know, that is the run fits are very tricky there. Kenny Moore for being a small guy, is such a sure tackler and also just so trained on the run fits and how it fits together. But at the same time, this is a passing league, and like, you got to get to a point where you don't just have one easy weakness for the defense to pick apart. If Kenny Moore goes down and you're rolling in, you know, some backup who never plays at nickel, and opposing quarterbacks just say, well, we're just going to pepper you at that spot, you're in trouble. So it matters more to have a guy who can really play lockdown coverage. We know Isaiah can do that. So I absolutely think that's a great way to go. And it would allow them to also, you know, keep Brandon Faison's an outside corner. He doesn't fit as well moving into the nickel. I mean, when that play he gave up to Michael Pittman Jr., I mean, that Pittman's going to win that sometimes. That was a rare situation where, like, as physical as Faison is, Michael Pittman's one of those few 6'5 receivers who can win that battle and then win with some level of speed down the field and then catch radius. But, like, Faison's going to win the matchup against most number two wide receivers on a size physical standpoint. It's if you move him into the nickel that's where you get, you know, the short shifty guys and the short depth of targets, and it's a completely different deal. Isaiah fits the coverage element of that well. We'll see if he can learn and if he can, you know, add enough of the run fits to maybe be a fit there.
They started him out there when he was a rookie as a possibility. Just the hard part to remember, though, is that was less about finding a backup for Kenny and more about just trying to find a spot for him. Because when he was drafted, they didn't necessarily envision him being the corner that he was last year. He was supposed to be a special teams guy at first. One of the other things is, could you run a dime? Like, do you feel like more of the true classic dime? Because the thing about Kenny is Kenny's a 5'9", I can't remember what his weight is, but he's in reality, the way he plays, he's like a 6'2", 220-pounder. And so you could almost go, like, against the Chiefs or somebody like that, I'm thinking. Somebody that spreads out, likes to throw four wide receivers. You could feel comfortable, I think, if you feel like Isaiah Rodgers can play inside, you could feel comfortable going with a four-cornerback dime, a true four-cornerback dime, and then kind of expecting Kenny to handle the load in terms of the physical stuff, because he can do that, you know? And that's intriguing. That's a really intriguing thing. I think there's some three safety stuff they're going to be able to do with Rodney McLeod too. But it's intriguing, it just based on the matchups, to have the ability to deploy two nickels if you have to and go full dime.
Yeah, I like that idea. And what we're seeing too with Rodney is they are trying to build a little bit of versatility in the secondary. And he was getting reps yesterday at strong safety, which is not a spot that he's played much in his career, but it's also a little different in this defense. It's an in-the-box role, but it's the way he described it is it's a leadership role too, and you've got to be able to call out a lot. They stress it's not just a, you know, an extra run defender. It is a big coverage role in there. So, you know, I still think Nick Cross, they love him so much, and if he can take this from a mental standpoint and stay healthy, I think that's his role. But that makes Rodney a kind of interesting little chess piece. You know, he can back up those two spots at free and in strong safety, and he could be that extra third safety. And if your extra safety is this guy who started 123 games and won a Super Bowl, and like that is what you want in Rover coverages and abilities to trick the quarterback and create turnovers, which is what they're all about. So they're trying to build depth now, but they're trying to build also just versatility and abilities to shake out of what they are, because the risk in this defense that they're installing with Gus Bradley is that they play a ton of single high safety relative to the rest of the league, and that has not been a good trend in the NFL. Like, the numbers behind what quarterbacks are doing right now to single safety looks versus two safety looks, I actually threw it in a story the other day. So last season against two high safeties, quarterbacks across all the NFL threw 152 touchdowns on 195 picks. So that's 43 more picks. But against just single high safety, it was 334 touchdowns, 222 interceptions. So 120 more touchdowns than picks against single high, and 43 fewer touchdowns and picks against two high. Like, that's pretty jarring. Obviously, they're going to mix it up here, and, you know, they talk about evolving. We'll see. They've had this system for a long time. It's going to put a lot of stress on these safeties. But one way to combat some of that, you know, predictable elements is to do things like three safety sets and dime packages and whatever else they can do to just not be completely predictable on the back end.
Well, one of the things about the strong safety position, and this is another thing from talking to Milas, was just that's the position that makes the calls. Because Gus Bradley kind of hinted the other day that it's a pretty complex position that Nick Cross is trying to learn. And so I asked Milas, like, what's the complexity of it? And he said, number one, you're making the calls. Number two, you're very heavily involved in the run fits, and that changes when people motion. So people motion, he has to be able to know, okay, if this guy shifted over, that opens up a gap, that changes my gap that I have to fill. And those were the two things he mentioned mostly as why it's so complicated to play that position. But he also said that there have not been a lot of mental mistakes from Nick Cross so far. They've been really, really encouraged by how Nick Cross has played. Again, a lot of the talk with Milas was I would describe him as almost being pleasantly surprised, just the way he was talking about it, like in his tone and everything, was just – he just felt really good about what they have. Julian Blackman's another reason for that, and just in the way he's ranged around, both in the passing game and in the running game, was some of the stuff that – I guess that some of the stuff that he's not having to teach over and over again right now with the safeties. And we'll see. I mean, we're only a week in. Things aren't super complicated. One of the other things is – you know, Frank Reich kind of alluded to this. They're installing right now. They're not game planning their defense. And obviously it gets harder to make all those checks and calls when an offense is game planning you. But 5 days in, or whatever we are now, I think it's a week in actual days and 5 days in practices. Very impressed with Nick Cross's ability to do the mental side of what's probably the most complex position in the secondary.
And what's interesting is, yeah, you wouldn't initially think that the strong safety would be the guy doing that, but because they play the middle third single high looks, like that guy tends to be Julian Blackman's position. They're pretty far back. Like they're almost too far back to be communicative and part of the fabric of the rest of the defense. The way Julian's described is he's the eraser on a lot of plays. Like if this doesn't work, if the press off the line, if the man match stuff underneath doesn't work, he's got to catch up and make the tackle. And that is a huge part, is its speed, and its instincts and its tackling ability. And so that's where what's interesting is the one thing that makes you nervous is, and again, I really hope this doesn't happen for him, but Julian Blackman has not been the healthiest player in his career so far. And if he goes down, I don't know quite how they can play this defense the same way. I just read off those numbers with single high safeties. If they don't have Julian Blackman out there, I assume that's where Rodney McLeod would just bump over. That's fine, I guess, but that's also a 32-year-old coming off an offseason.
Right. He has the experience to play that spot, but the hard part is, does he have the legs left? Yeah. Is what you're saying.
And so then another guy who absolutely has the physical tools that they've been playing there with the second team is Marcel Dabo out of Germany, which I think is interesting. That's how it shows you what I'm talking about, how much just pure speed and that downhill ability to catch up to guys matters. But obviously, I mean, Dabo is a free player to them this year. He's going to be a free practice squad player. I mean, it would be a miracle to me if he is an actual contributor on the field. Not to take anything away from him. I think he looks pretty intriguing. He had a pick yesterday off Sam Ellinger. But it's just such a dramatic shift from what we've seen before and what he's done before in his career. So that's one thing. Is like Julian Blackman is set up for a big-time role in this defense, and my God, they need him to stay healthy.
Typically, international players, this is the first time the Colts have had one. This is the first time the AFC South has been assigned to them. But if I'm sure a lot of listeners haven't really paid attention to this. There have been several guys who've come through the International Player Pathway Program and become players. F.A. Obada is the first one that comes to mind. There's a couple other ones. But even like Jordan Mailata with the Eagles, like these are guys that usually take a year or two because you're talking about a much more enormous step up in competition and complexity than even college, the pros. I mean, European football isn't exactly European basketball, you know? So it's a lot harder step up. And that's why there's usually a little bit of a year or so that it takes them to get beyond being just sort of a rotational player or a special teams player, which if Dabo plays, and again, like you just mentioned, they have an extra player. They don't have to do anything with him. So even that, he has to be really good to do this. But if he plays, it's going to be because he earns a role on special teams.
Yeah.
And it's hard to expect him right now to, you know, take on that first role if he goes down. With McLeod, I think of McLeod as sort of like that. Like you said, like I don't think Ronnie McLeod's going to make mental mistakes. The question is, physically, can he range as much as Julian Blackman can? And that's a couple of the plays we've seen Julian Blackman make so far have been incredible range plays that Ron Miles frankly said there's only a handful of guys who can do that kind of stuff and play this the safety the way we need to. So yeah, if Blackman goes down, I think that that's a real interesting and difficult. McLeod gives them mentally exactly what you would want out of that. Physically, it's going to be hard to replace. And I don't know that there's a guy out there that you can get who would have been a better replacement, because the other guys who can do both of those things, the mental and the physical, are all starting somewhere.
Yeah. Well, it's like we did a podcast, I think it was 2 weeks ago at this point, where we talked about the list I had done on the most essential Colts. And Julian Blackman was not on that list. And I had considered him. But to me, when we talked about one of the elements was, you know, what is the ceiling for this player? It was hard to gauge for a guy coming off Achilles injury. But in terms of like how much his role matters and what's behind him, like that is a serious, serious position. Like that, I ended up putting Braden Smith at 10 on that list for similar reasons. Like he may not be the best player in the Colts, but if he goes down there in a world of trouble, I think Julian Blackman's starting to show that. Part of it is the upside too, is like how, you're right, how fast he gets to plays. That's mental processing, and it's just the explosion. That's what caught Stephon Gilmore's eye, was just how this guy shoots from 0 to 100 so quickly to get to where he's trying to go. And you know, Julian Blackman, you just gotta hope he stays healthy. The hard thing is, I mean, it's a 17-game season, and this team's aspirations are to play 18, 19, 20 games, they hope. So the sheer odds are that they probably are going to have to play with somebody other than Julian back there. We'll see how they adjust, because Gus Bradley is tied to this game, has run it for his entire career here, you know, created some of the best defenses ever doing it, has had some bad defenses doing it when it hasn't worked. So if it starts to have an issue with personnel, I'm curious how they adjust. And I don't know, maybe that's how much Stephon Gilmore matters to this team, is you had to get such an all-pro, high-level cornerback that if something like that happens, you just do the best you can with what you have. Luckily for them, they have a lot of other good players outside of all these safety positions, to where, like, while as young as they are at safety and maybe the risks they have at the depth level, you know, they still have enough to kind of, you know, try and overcome it.
It's going to be interesting watching the defense as it evolves, because it's already evolved from where Seattle was. Seattle's already, I mean, Bradley has said over and over again, what they did in Seattle is not what he does now. You know, they've changed from a landmark-based cover three to a match-based cover three. But on top of that, they also added John Fox to broaden the scheme a little bit, to evolve the scheme a little bit. That was the whole point of it. Fox's background is in more of quarters coverage, which for simplified purposes, that's middle of field open. The middle of field's open. There's two set, which means there's two safeties back there. I'll be interested to see how much of that they play. I don't think they're going to go to that. I mean, the core of this is still going to be that cover three match zone, but they play so many different things now. It'll be interesting to see how it evolves over the course of the season and what they do differently, because Kenny Moore is an interesting piece that they haven't really had. Milas said that way back in March, and he's going to evolve the scheme a little bit just in what they do with him from a blitzing and run stuffing standpoint, and that alters the coverage a little bit too. So it'll be interesting to see how this scheme deploys and evolves and what they do and what maybe what John Fox's influence is. I think it's going to be hard to tell that really, because the scheme's already evolved from what it was in Seattle, but it'll be interesting to see, you know, what iteration of it we get here.
Yeah, and I will say with John Fox, you know, I covered, my first job was covering the Bears when he got hired there. And, like, I'm curious to see what he does with Nick Cross, because one of the comparisons I saw with Nick Cross, like, pro comps, was Adrian Amos, who's now on the Packers. But he was on the Bears, and he was the first draft John Fox had. They picked him in the fourth round out of Penn State. He was a long developmental player, but ended up becoming a really, really good force, like this mix of hard hitting and some turnovers, and ended up signing a big deal in Green Bay to kind of lead one of the, you know, one of the contending defenses. So I wonder if he's almost here to be sort of a help to Nick Cross and a help to, you know, Mike Mitchell, who's first year safeties coach there. And he said he's mostly been telling Nick Cross, like, watch everything Roddy McLeod does, because that's, you know, pro's pro. But like at some point, as far as like evolving this to what it could be next, like we said, Rodney, it's great to follow like the day-to-day professionalism of him, but this is a new role to him too, strong safety. So, you know, to have a guy like John Fox, I think, who is a defensive back specialist and who worked so well with Adrian Amos and kind of saw him go from this toolsy young player to, you know, one of the top safeties in the league. I'm curious to see how that plays out for Nick Cross, because everything, we keep bringing up Cross, but the reason is that, like, they're just infatuated by him. They trade up in the into the third round to get him, trade next year's pick. And when I asked Chris Ballard, like, was that at all connected to Kari Willis's, you know, idea to retire, he said no, because Nick Cross stuck out like a sore thumb, and they needed safety depth anyway. We saw them with Andrew Sendejo last year in the weaknesses that formed there. So interesting to see how Cross develops, how quickly it does, and what it maybe can change for this defense.
Ballard kind of mentioned the other safeties sort of competing behind. Armani Watts has been in that that fourth safety spot, which was George Odom's for so long. Armani Watts is in there. Rodney Thomas is in there. Dabo's probably in there. Will Redmond. It'll be interesting to see what they do there in terms of who they do. It's just a much deeper safety. It's a much deeper safety picture right now than it was last year when they broke camp with just essentially three on the roster with Odom and then the two starters. So one of the more interesting things to watch, we're going to get to see a little bit more here of the lines, I think, in this next week. I think by the time we're doing the pod next week, we'll have a better feel for what's going on with the offensive lines, because it's really only been one day in pads. I give it another half day, because they did do one-on-one pass rush drills when they had shoulder pads on Saturday night. But it's just not a whole big body of work yet. So here's a good example. Ben Banigou had a sack yesterday, and that looks great on the observations. But I didn't notice him on any other plays, and he didn't really have a great rep in the one-on-ones. So, like, what does it mean overall? Like, how is he playing? There's a flash, but it hasn't been dominant. And with everything that happens out here, that's why we talk so much about the secondary and the wide receivers on this, is because they've actually been able to go full go. You need to stack stuff up. And Morocco Brown was talking about this the other day. Basically every year, he said, there's guys that look great when they don't have pads on through the off season and the first couple days, because they're just so athletic. And then there's guys that they put the pads on and it changes everything, because they're just better when they can hit. And so we're going to have to see some stuff stack up. And I think by the time we do the next podcast, we'll be able to talk more about things like the left tackle battle, what's going on with the line beyond the top four guys, that the defensive line behind the top four guys. I think that some of that stuff will shake itself out kind of as camp goes along. We just don't have a whole lot of information right now.
Yeah, and that hit me when I was talking to Nate Ollie, the defensive line coach, the other day, because I was talking about Kwity Paye and Dio Adangbo and kind of the strides they're making. And he talked about sort of their attitude, their approach. Then we realized, like, that's all we can really talk about. Like, we can't really get into, you know, how well they're becoming this big end position, because they just – I think at that point they had just put on shoulder pads.
Yeah, they hadn't done full pads yet even when we first talked to Ollie.
So I'm going to table writing on those guys for a little bit, but I am fascinated, because that's one guy we've really not – I don't even think – we may not have brought him up on this pod yet, Dio Adangbo, but it's fascinating, a second-round pick that they pretty much took to have a redshirt year. He sort of feels like a luxury player this year because of the signing of Yannick Ngakoue and that bumping Kwity Paye over. That's a wonderful place to be in, though, considering last year they didn't even have – two starting ends that should have been on the field. So that'll be something to watch here as we go forward.
My one Dio Adangbo update is that he's played more than one position, which isn't true of everybody on the line. He's lined up at the big end, and he's also lined up on the interior next to Buckner in passing situations. The passing line, they haven't done a ton of third down work yet, but when they did do some on Saturday, it was Paye, Buckner, and Ngakoue, that's the normal starting line for three of them. But then the sub out was Odangbo instead of Grover Stewart. And the defensive tackle spot is actually really interesting to me, just as a quick thing, because RJ McIntosh, who hasn't played in a couple years, has played up with the first team and actually looked really good. I talked to Nate Ollie the other day about him, and he said some of that can be scheme wise. The last couple schemes he played in, I don't think were quite so penetrating. And it'll be interesting to see if he can keep carrying it, but there's been good stuff there. And then I was just telling somebody yesterday during the one-on-ones, the two rookies, like, you can see why they picked him. Eric Johnson is really, really explosive off the snap. He's very quick off the snap. And Curtis Brooks, well, I don't necessarily know that he has the same first step as Johnson, or at least he hasn't showed it out here. His lateral quickness, like after he makes his initial thing, after he makes his initial step, is impressive. And so, I mean, I just named three guys. That's not even counting Byron Cowart. Like, that defensive tackle spot is interesting to me. And I know it's not sexy. Nobody likes talking about, like, the back end of the roster, but really that's what's being decided right now. And actually, this is one I'm going to use this to segue into one thing just to end the podcast. I know that there's a lot of talk about, and this comes up every year, about guys look good in camp, they don't look good in the season. Why are we reporting on them if they're not going to look good in the season? Well, the point of training camp for the team and for us is not to know what they're going to be in the season. You can't do that. Like, you can get an idea, know everything.
I got a fantasy football draft, though. You got to help me out here.
The point is to figure out what the team is going to do with the roster initially. And to that point, like, I'm going to bring up a couple of the guys that Colts fans always bring up. I wasn't here for Daron Carter, so I can't speak to that. But, like, Deion Kane and Michael Strawn were camp stars who didn't end up panning out. Well, they didn't end up panning out in the regular season, but they did play early. Kane stepped into was given every chance to take over the number two job. He played like 40 snaps a game after Devin Funchess got hurt in 2019. He just didn't grab the opportunity in real games. Strawn, they gave I think 52 snaps in the first two games last year. They gave him a significant chunk of snaps in the first two games, and he couldn't do it. And he couldn't do it from a mental understanding of the offense standpoint, and so then they moved him out of it. But they did react to what happened in training camp. And so, like, when we're doing observations from training camp on some of these guys, like, for me, it's really about what's this roster going to look like coming out of it. I'm not trying to make a prediction on what they're going to be in the regular season. I don't think you can do that based on training camp practices. But and that's so when we talk about our observations, that's sort of what we're saying is. It has more to do with what is this team going to look like the first couple weeks of the season than it is about are we predicting that Alec Pierce is going to have 65 catches for 732 yards and four touchdowns. Like, it's not about that. It's can Alec Pierce play a role right away, and a significant one.
I think it even gets more specific than that. I mean, all to me, training camp, everything we ride is a snapshot in time. It's like where guys are, where situations are, you know, on August 3rd. And so, like, there's going to be someone who brings up some story or some tweet we had in November saying, hey, you said this. That was true on August 2nd. Like, Ashton Doolin's looked great so far. That's what I wrote today, is that he, like, if the coaches are promising a role for him. Yesterday, the pads came on for the first time. That's a challenge for him in this growth as a wide receiver. He had a drop in the back of the end zone when a defender was cutting over. So we'll see. I mean, all of this is a process. All of it's growth. Like, we're talking about young players, too, who are going to have some ups and downs. So we'll write in the moment about some of the ups and some of the downs. And you just got to take it in context of, like, the reason they do training camp as a team day-to-day, hour after hour, is to test these guys and get them to grow. And so we're just chronicling that along the way. And you got to not read too much into one way or the other. And I've seen it on both sides. When I released the Ashton Doolin story today, I had some people rolling their eyes of like, oh, this is just training camp buzz. We've seen this before. That's like the fantasy football community going off that he's now going to be some big fantasy football star. I'm like, actually, all it says is that through August 3rd, he's looked pretty good. So I trust most readers and people who listen to this podcast can kind of take this in context. Take everything with a grain of salt. It's a very complimentary time of year, but we are trying to wade through and at least tell you this is what the growth patterns look like, the ups and the downs, and we'll see where it goes.
Well, and it does go the other way, because Michael Pittman Jr., I mean, they didn't have a real training camp in 2020, but the part of training camp that we did see, he kind of looked herky-jerky, didn't look great. He didn't look like he was adapting to the NFL really well. I know I didn't say this, but I know somebody at some point said that they thought maybe Desmond Patman was ahead of him. And Patman didn't play as a rookie, and Pittman caught 40 balls.
And Pittman admitted that the other day, that he said, Alec Pierce is way ahead of me than I was when I was here my first camp.
Well, I mean, Pittman, I can't remember if Pittman said this or not, but, like, Pittman didn't have it off season at all. So Pierce has a huge advantage in that thing. But, look, people were talking about that in training camp, was is their sixth round receiver maybe better than the guy they picked with their first pick? And it, well, no. No, he's not. It's just what you, all you can do is write what you see at the time. And I think the important part is to take it with we're just, like you said, we're just writing what we see at the time. It doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be that way. It does sometimes mean that the team is going to give players chances. It doesn't mean that that player is going to run with those chances. Deion Kane might be the best example of that. They gave him every opportunity. He just couldn't handle it.
I think that's a perfect way to put it. Like, if you think about Ashton Doolin, he's my example for this. What he has earned so far is opportunity. That's it. If he doesn't perform, if he can't catch the ball, if he can't stay healthy, if he can't learn routes, he's not going to play. Okay, like, no one got guaranteed anything because of what they are or what they've done so far. They've got to continue to earn it. That was Reich's comment, too. He said he's earned it so far, but he's got to continue to earn it. That's what this is. We will chronicle it from now to the end. And if, like, and that's what we're just letting you know, the opportunities that if Doolin takes this and runs with it and looks great every day, he's going to have a role in this offense. So we just have to see how it goes.
That's this for the Colts Cover 2 podcast here after the first week of training camp. We'll have more next week. We may do an emergency here, but this is not so far. Knock on, there is no wood near me.
I know. I tried with the Julian Blackman stuff earlier.
There's no wood near me, so I can't knock on wood, but I said it, so that counts. So far, we have not had to do an emergency podcast. They've had injuries, but they've had injuries to guys who are not players who are necessarily expected to make the roster. So we'll see how it keeps going. We'll be back for the Colts Cover 2 podcast. I am Joel A. Erickson, and this has been Nate Atkins.